It's Thursday, April 11, and we've got a jam-packed episode for you, so let's just dive right in. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is What's Worth Talking About. A News Hub reporter, the former broadcasting minister, and the former head of news and current affairs at TVNZ share their thoughts on how New Zealand's media industry continues from here. The concerns over staff welfare and costs at Scott Base in Antarctica. New research reveals the stark realities of our drinking habits. That's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Even in the ever-changing world of journalism, this week's confirmation of cuts was devastating. An entire news operation axed both from our screens and from online, with the demise of all TV3's News Hub operations, the 6pm news, the AM show and the website. And then that news was closely followed by another blow. TVNZ's current affairs programme Sunday is also ending after 22 years. On Tuesday, we heard that Fair Go would also be chopped, along with One News's Midday and Tonight bulletins. The combined staff losses across both networks is well over 300. News Hub investigative journalist Michael Mora is with us now. And Michael, what is New Zealand losing with the demise of News Hub?
Well, it's losing part of the fourth estate. I think it's really bad for democracy. News Hub still reaches around 900,000 people each week. So still a lot of the population relies on our news service, our independent news service, to hold the powerful to account and to highlight the plight of the vulnerable. So it's devastating for myself and 250 colleagues in news, but I think it's also devastating for the country at large. Ultimately, what our news service set out to always do was for the betterment of society, and that is the loss.
Do you think it's fair to have these rumoured conversations with third parties about a possible rescue package of some sort, like just dangled in front of News Hub staff, when there's no clear information about who the convos are with or what they're even about?
It adds a level of uncertainty, but at the same time, any external negotiations which go on are usually held in private. Mm. That's the case for any business.
Why do you love News Hub?
I love it because of the colleagues I work with every day. I love it because my colleagues are just as passionate as I am about news. And I really truly believe in journalism as a critical resource for a functioning democracy. I believe in what it can achieve. And that might just be informing someone, or it might be educating someone about part of the world that they didn't know about. Or at the best, journalism has the ability to create positive change that betters society. It has the ability to change laws which are not working, and it has the ability to expose injustices. And done well, all of those things can be achieved. And that's good for society at large. And we're just such a, you know, we're really a family here. We're all so tight. While we're still employed, we have a duty to continue delivering a bulletin each night. And personally, I will continue to contribute towards that until the end.
Multi-award-winning News Hub investigative journalist Michael Mora, kia ora, thank you for your time. And many are asking how this could be allowed to happen in the first place, and if something should have been done at a government level to ensure New Zealand has a robust media landscape in the way democratic countries do. To speak more on this is former Broadcasting Minister, Labour MP Willie Jackson. Kia ora, Willie. What's your reaction to all of this?
Extremely heart-wrenching stuff. And having been a broadcaster for many, many years, you know, and they're probably in a lot of despair because wondering where they're going to go. But I also think that the government has shown no support for them. I know it's a hard time in terms of, we all know we're in the middle of a cost of living crisis, but you just feel that you've got a broadcasting minister who's just disappeared on them.
What needs to be done to make the media more robust?
One, does the media feature at all in terms of this government's plans, right? You saw the 36-point plan they came out with, right? Where was the media in terms of priorities there? Was there any strategy whatsoever with regards to the media? Was there any strategy that talked about supporting the digital bargaining bill, for instance? Nothing. We've seen nothing. That's been a huge cry from media around the country. Can we just have some support on a basic thing like the digital bargaining bill, which would bring about $50 million back into the local market? I'm not saying it's easy, because we've got declining audiences, you've got a totally different media setup. It doesn't mean to say you just should just sit back and just say, well, let's just see how it all pans out.
Did you do enough, do you think, in your time as broadcasting minister to stabilise and support the media industry?
I don't think you ever do enough, you know. I think we did more. Than any other governments in the last generation. But, you know, we saw what was coming. And did we do enough? No, well, I don't think, as I said, there was more. There's so much more you can do, but we did more than the previous national government had done.
Former Broadcasting Minister, Labour MP Willie Jackson, kia ora.
Kia ora.
Current Broadcasting Minister Melissa Lee strongly rejects accusations she's been asleep at the wheel as organisations slash their news and current affairs services.
What I can actually say is that I've been working very hard to try and provide some support in making sure that New Zealand's media industry and the sector is sustainable and modernised and innovative going forward.
Are you acting fast enough?
It might seem like it is very slow, but there is actually a process. But what I can actually tell you is that there's no one real answer for the industry, and it is something that everyone really needs to actually work together. And I've been working through to try and actually talk to the sector ever since I've actually become a minister, and actually trying to find a solution. And one of the ways that I have actually mentioned is the review of the Broadcasting Act, and looking at the sector in general and trying to find a solution to modernise and innovate and actually be sustainable going forward.
So just how do all these cutbacks really matter in the wider scheme of things? Bill Rolston is a veteran New Zealand journalist. He's presented shows. He was political editor for TV3, and he was also head of TVNZ's news and current affairs between the years 2003 and 2007, and he's with us now. Bill, what have we, New Zealand, lost in the last 48 hours or so?
Well, we've lost the living history of New Zealand as of today, you know, with News Hub gone in just a few more weeks, with Sunday gone, the loss of that current affairs show, the loss of the consumer show, Fair Go, that's an enormous thing. How do you expect to have a democracy when you can't see and hear as much as you did yesterday? It's a tragedy. And I know there's a lot of people losing their jobs out there outside of television and journalism. And there are probably a lot of people go, journalists, who cares? I tell you what, you know, there's the health of our democracy at stake at the moment. And I can't see anyone doing anything about it.
How does the media industry continue from here?
I don't know how they can come back from this. You know, it's possible you may find RNZ or Stuff or somebody will launch its own little video news thing. It may be that you can make up for the loss of some of Sunday by documentaries that are sponsored by New Zealand On Air. Mm. It may be that they can rev up that slightly defunct 7 o'clock offering on TV1. And actually do some serious, go back to serious current affairs on a nightly basis, because they've got to do something to fill that vacuum.
Mm. What does New Zealand now look like on the world stage, do you reckon? We've only got one television news network as of July 5, and that one television news network's having to make severe cutbacks itself.
Yeah, maybe they'll see us as a sort of microcosm of what could happen to them overseas one day, but it's just... I don't know how the world would look at this, but I think there will be a little bit of sniggering up the sleeve by some, and the rest will see it as a dire forecast for their own futures.
What are the risks with all of these reductions? Like, we're just losing TV shows, TV news networks. We're just losing voices, right? We're losing places where different stories get told.
Yeah, I mean, we're losing the way a lot of us made our judgments over the years. Now, you know, you take away mainstream news and mainstream current affairs, and you're left with a lot of the wacko jobs online out there, spreading their disinformation. It's really dangerous. And I think this government actually better wake up to the fact, and this minister who appears to be asleep, had better wake up to the fact that it needs to urgently work out how to fund news and current affairs. I don't think government works well in darkness.
Veteran Kiwi journalist Bill Ralston, appreciate your thoughts.
I think you're conflating a whole bunch of issues.
Don't want to be held to account rising child abuse numbers.
You can manipulate crime statistics.
I promised I wouldn't have a tag to you about gotcha journalism.
Hang into the National Party's tagline there.
It would be a resignation offence if I didn't deliver tax reduction.
I'm not worried about it at all.
Nothing iffy in there. That sits with you perfectly fine.
That's what we're focused on.
Whatever happens in politics, the weird, the wonderful, the important, the thought-provoking, we got you. Listen to Tova wherever you get your podcasts.
If you'd like to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is newsable@stuff.co.nz. The Office of the Auditor General has raised serious concerns about cost blowouts and a poor culture at Scott Base, New Zealand's Antarctic Research Centre. In a briefing for MPs, the office warned that Antarctica New Zealand and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade had not been transparent with the public or Parliament about major issues with the base's redevelopment. And it also highlighted worries around close relationships with those at nearby McMurdo Station, a US Antarctic base where alcohol has had to be banned following reports of sexual assault and harassment. Here with more on this is Bridie Whitten, one of Stuff's political reporters. Bridie, how did all this information emerge?
Hi, Imogen. So it all came to light in this document that was published to the Parliament website. So I've been poring through it since then, and it's making some serious concerns about the sort of the culture down in Antarctica and whether we're doing enough to protect our staff and scientists down there.
And so what's going on with the redevelopment, first of all? Let's start there. Claims from the Auditor General of lack of transparency. Has there been a massive cost blowout that we've just not been told about?
Yeah, so what we do know is that there's been plans for redevelopment of Scott Base for about a decade. The budget is enormous. It's $500 million. The issue now is that they've had to put it on ice because it was going to even surpass that. Mm. Now, it's not that complicated. Sir Brian Roche, who's the outgoing chair, told the committee it's really just like an advanced backpacker situation. However, the huge cost blowout is down to the fact that you can't leave a single bit of rubbish there. So they've sort of had to put it on ice and go back to the drawing board. And then that will go to ministers to decide sort of towards the end of this month it should be.
Then there's also the concerns over the closeness with this US base, with poor culture at this US base and accusations of sexual assault. What's the deal there? What is the concern? Is it the mere association with people at that base?
The report points out that, one, the New Zealand scientists and staff have all the same risk factors that led to the harassment and assault at the American facility.
Right.
For example, you've got people living together in close proximity in a remote location, professional and social lines are blurred, people are drinking together, and the other factor is that the New Zealand staff and personnel are working really closely with the American staff. We share logistics and they're physically close to each other. The report is basically pointing out that, you know, if McMurdo has had all these issues, what are we doing about it?
But where to from here for things like these concerns over the culture?
Well, I think what I found really interesting is that at the Select Committee, this issue was not actually brought up. So what's so interesting about this Office of the Auditor General report is that it basically spoon feeds questions that MPs could ask officials. But the MPs at the Select Committee failed to do that. They didn't pick up on this at all, which was really surprising to me. And I approached David Parker just on his way into the House before, and he is on the Select Committee, and asked him, you know, what happened? Why didn't you pick up on this, you know, line of inquiry that the Officer of the Auditor General suggested? And he said, oh, there's no conspiracy here, and sort of walked off. So I think the fact that, you know, the Select Committee hasn't picked it up, there's obviously not a lot of political will to deal with this. It's not something anyone certainly on that committee seemed particularly concerned by. So it sort of raises questions as to whether it will be, you know, dealt with anytime soon, really.
Very, very bizarre. Bridie Whitten, Stuff political reporter. Kia ora, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Quick reminder that if you are enjoying what you're hearing, why not chuck us a like and a follow on your favourite podcast platform, because it'll help other people find us. All of us living in these parts of the world, I'm talking about us Kiwis and Aussies, might have a bit of a reputation for being big drinkers. But some new global research into consuming alcohol has found New Zealanders and Australians are more keen on drinking at home than those in England and Scotland. The study, which was carried out by researchers in both Australia and New Zealand for the journal Drug and Alcohol Review, also found risky drinkers from all four of those countries stayed at home to indulge. So what does this tell us about our drinking culture? One of the researchers, Alexandra Tawney from La Trobe University in Melbourne, is with us now. Kia ora.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. I'd love to know if you were surprised at all by these findings.
So these results weren't particularly surprising. We've been noticing a shift towards home drinking more generally over the last couple of years, and this has only increased post-COVID.
And what do we take from risky drinkers choosing to stay at home and drink? Does this reveal more about how hidden our problems with alcohol are?
It does, but it also reveals that we need more policy to be introduced for this sort of changing drinking culture. So previously, a lot of people were drinking heavily at places like pubs, where there's a lot more policy interventions in place there. So you would have someone who would have a responsible service of alcohol, for example, and would know when to potentially cut someone off.
And of course, the comfort of being at home and not having to worry about anything at all, and possibly even getting more alcohol delivered to you, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So that's what a lot of other research has been looking at. And they found that one of the main reasons people actually choose to get home delivery services for alcohol is to extend a drinking session.
And is that concerning?
It is. People report that they are drinking more than they would like to or they intended to because of this option. So if that option wasn't there, they wouldn't be consuming the amounts that they are.
Research like this, you mentioned policy decisions. What sorts of things could be put in place to sort of intervene in these risky drinkers being at home?
Yeah, so there's a lot of debates going on at the moment. There would need to be some sort of policy change to home delivery services. So maybe that's stronger enforced ID checks and things like that to make sure that minors aren't being provided with alcohol. It could be also things like minimum unit pricing. So reducing the availability of cheap alcohol.
Because, of course, requiring a delivery driver to check someone's ID on their own property presents risks in itself.
It does. And they're not receiving any training currently, I believe. And also, they're not required to. So why would they?
What do you hope people take away from this piece of research?
I hope that research and policy start to focus more on home drinking and just want to focus on reducing the harms that are associated with that, making it safer for everyone.
Yeah, safer indeed. Alexandra Tawney from La Trobe University in Melbourne. Kia ora, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyway, that's Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells.
Was this episode of Newsable usable? Then back NZ News by making a financial contribution at stuff.co.nz/support.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories, or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.